Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Mr. Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
How you doing, Stone?
I'm looking good. You look nice in your crisp High Velocity Radio shirt.
That's right. It's High Velocity Show, so I thought I'd dress up.
Right. It's not the nicest shirt in the studio today, though. Wow. We have a whole entourage here decked
yellow
out in the black and yellow. That is way cool. So we'll have to learn more about that before too long. A little bit later in the show, we're going to actually visit with a gentleman that we met at a remote broadcast. Do you remember that? We did the thing with Training Pros?
Yes, that was, two remotes ago.
That was two remotes ago. Yes, since then we've done the Startup Riot thing.
Yes.
But this guy impressed us so much and was so energetic and had so much to offer, we asked him to come in the studio and visit with us.
He's the only person that we asked to come in the studio.
You know,
I hope he appreciates
that. That's the truth. So we will, in a little bit later in the program, we will visit with Mr. Frank Payne. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Senior Vice President Brokerage for Ackerman & Company, Mr. Ted Schwartz. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Ackerman & Company, what do you guys do?
We are a full-service commercial real estate firm based in Atlanta, been around since 1967.
You don't look that old.
Got an early start.
I'm getting there.
Prodigy. He was a prodigy.
But we are a full-service firm. We've been here for a long time. We do all different facets of commercial real estate. Being from land to investment to industrial and to my passion, which is the office world.
Now, what do you do in the office world?
I primarily represent tenants, help them find space, help them get rid of space, help them find buildings to purchase, help them sell buildings. And from time to time, I will get landlords that will ask me to help them with their requirements as well. But the truth is, I enjoy the tenant side of the world.
Now, what does the tenant side of the world mean?
The tenant side of the world is that anytime you have an office space, you're going to have a tenant who is going to be in a space, and you're going to have a landlord who leases them a space. And my job is to represent that tenant in their interest and to get them the best deal that they can and use the market as my leverage in order to facilitate their goals and objectives. The landlord has a distinctly different view. The landlord is there to protect their building, their assets, and their face rates. And my job is to create a market deal between both parties.
So we don't need no stinking face rates, right? But like, so Lee and I, we go in blind without the benefit of somebody like you to coach us through this thing. What are some of the pitfalls? What are some of the mistakes we might make?
The mistakes,
like believing the guy, right? That's the number one mistake, just believing the guy at the building.
Yeah, the guy in the building, he may be a great guy, and there's lots of great guys. But they have a distinctive role of representing who their fiduciary responsibility is, and that is to the landlord. That is to the building. In every building that I know, there is no one set of terms of rules and regulations on how to do a deal. Every deal is completely distinctive. And by having a landlord who just says, well, this is the way it's going to be,
right,
pardon my French, it's just a bunch of baloney.
We should use the Schwartz methodology, the Schwartz deal methodology. So vacancy, are there a lot more vacancies now than just a few years ago?
Who's got the edge?
Yeah, exactly.
The edge is still in the tenant's favor. And in fact, I was actually in a meeting about a week ago, and one of the landlord guys said, has there ever been a landlord's market? And in truth, he has some say in that, but the truth is, depends on where you go, dictates exactly who really has the edge.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, if you went to Buckhead,
right?
Buckhead 2.5 years ago, well, when the market crashed in 2008, they were holding on to over 2.5 million square feet of office space, of empty, new, brand new office space.
Ouch.
So now what's happened? They have leased up 750,000 square feet of office space in Buckhead alone last year. Positive absorption. What I mean by that is they're taking over more space and not having more space come back to the market. Conversely, you have losers in the marketplace like downtown. Downtown has now 500,000 more square feet of office space than they did just a year ago.
And why is that? There, people are moving from downtown to different, to Buckhead, maybe, or they're, or
they
they're
move
just
all
away?
Over. They move all over. The truth is, there's no true way people move. It really comes down to who the decision maker is in that organization.
Right.
That decision maker will drive where the location will be. Like, for example, I'm an expert in the Georgia 400 corridor, and the reason why the Georgia 400 corridor has boomed since the middle 1990s has been directly due to the executive housing that has been located up in the Georgia 400 corridor. And as a result, the executives have decided to move the office close to where their home is.
Now, is credit tighter in your world? Do you have to have a Lee Cantor credit rating, or can somebody like me get into office space, or what's the story there?
There are a couple of really interesting developments going on with credit. From the landlord side, I will tell you from a tenant's perspective, landlord credit is more critical than it ever has. 3, 4, or 5 years ago, we used to never talk about the landlord's credit. Never.
Right.
Now we're talking about the landlord's credit all day long because they may have bought a building in 2005, 2006, 2007, and they're coming up for refinance of their building. And their building isn't worth the same amount of money as it was before.
Right.
Hence, a big problem.
It's a problem for the tenant if the landlord has those problems?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Because let's just use an example. Bank of America.
Right.
Big building. Midtown. They just got foreclosed on. You know, if the tenant doesn't have the proper necessary ingredients in their lease document, there could be some real issues with their building.
Jack their rent up?
No, not necessarily jack their rent up, but, for example, services could not be provided that they were once provided before.
Uh-huh.
So, and landlords can go into default. And it's a big, 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 big issue.
That's interesting because I was actually asking from the tenant side of things because
right.
I'm used to people asking me, look, you know, you got some collateral, you got some credit.
Right.
I don't know if we're going to let you move in or not, but it's the landlord credit.
Landlord credit is big. Now, I'm not excusing the tenant because, you know, I'm working on a deal right now in the Two Alliance Center building. And we're talking about a deal in which we're giving $50 per square foot, tenant improvement allowance. It's a big number.
Right.
The landlord really needs to know how that's going to be protected. Is that going to be protected by a letter of credit? Is that going to be protected by extra security deposit? What is the methodology by which that's going to be protected? So it goes both ways. And so, you know, I would say nowadays, landlords are being a little bit more cautious as far as how they're giving up their dollars, because they want to make sure that they get covered. They want to make sure that that tenant performs for the entire duration of their lease term.
Now, can you walk us through, like, say we're in a situation where we're ready to move out of here and get some space, and we're going to work with you, because it would be silly for us to just start going to buildings we like because of the shape, right? That's
absolutely
not a good strategy, right? And then, so now I can't just go to the leasing office and go, hey, we're looking for space. That would be...
No.
That's not a good play.
No.
So I call you up. I'm going, look, we prefer to be in this part of town. We definitely don't want to be in this town. Is that how it works? Like,
what's typically it look like? What you'll do is you'll set up a meeting with me, and I kind of equate myself to a chef,
you will. Okay.
You kind of give me all the ingredients
right
that go into the pie, or whatever
right
we're trying to create. Give me all the ingredients, and I'll show you a bunch of pies that I think work.
Now, some of the ingredients are how much money I have, right? But is some of the ingredients, like, we want to be on the top floor, or I don't want to be, you know, I want to be in 20 floors or higher. Do people ask for things like that?
Yeah, people ask for things. I'll give you an example. People ask for elevator lobby space. A space that's, you know, that has elevator lobby exposure. Could be on the ground floor, could be on a... Some people want mid-rise floor. Some people want to be on the ground floor. Some people want ingress, egress. I mean, everybody has a particular requirement. Someone wants a completely open floor plan. Someone wants a completely partitioned office floor plan.
Right.
There are so many different ways to get space, and my job is to try to find that space that meets all the goals and objectives without while saving the deal and not creating, in some cases, if the tenant's credit is not IBM credit, is to try to find a puzzle that fits in which we don't have to spend a lot of money. We don't have to spend a lot of money on the landlord's side, then the tenant should get a very favorable deal.
Right.
Now, are we stroking you a check to manage all this, or how does
absolutely
that piece of the
absolutely not.
I like that answer.
So you work for free?
I do not work for free.
Are you kidding me? Look at the way this guy's dressed.
I noticed. Someone's writing
so how does the money piece of it work?
No, the way it works is there is in every building, the landlord sets aside money for commissions.
Uh-huh.
And basically, the question is whether there's going to be one broker involved, which could be the landlord's broker, or whether there's going to be two brokers involved. They have it already set up. It's in the pro forma. We're in this building here in Sandy Springs, and it works just the same in this building as it works in a building in Buckhead, downtown, or in Alpharetta. And basically, I get paid out of the deal volume, if you will. Mm-hmm. So whatever that deal volume ends up being, I get a portion of that.
So now that's universal. So any buildings, like buildings don't have exclusive, like you have to go, you know, like Southwest, you have to go through their website. I can't go to Southwest Airlines and buy a ticket online. I have to go to the southwest.com website.
No, I mean, you know, the way this works is this is a relationship driven business.
Right.
This is not one, 1-800 call Ted. But basically, it's a relationship-driven business in which what you're doing is you're hiring me to be your advisor. Think of myself as something different than your financial planner.
Right.
It's something very similar to that. And that's the kind of level of service. I will tell you, a lot of people, my business, they do nothing but just knock on doors all day long.
On what doors are they knocking on? Like, why would
he doesn't know? He's not a door knocker. So how do you go to market and build relationships? Because you're not cold calling people and knocking on. How do you do it, man?
No, the way it works is building relationships, strategic partnerships with people. You know, the way it works for me is people. You know, I get called, I get referred to, I get, you know, asked to come on shows like this, and whatnot, and build relationships, and that's what it's all about.
Right, like you were nominated as part of our Connector series, I believe. Right.
No, that's exactly how you got on our screen. Someone nominated you as one of Atlanta's best connectors. In fact, I think more than one person nominated Ted. Why is that? What do you think?
What are you connecting?
To cause people to...
I mean, my job is, you know, I'm more than just doing real estate. I'm really helping someone solve a problem. And when you solve a problem, there could be many different facets to that problem. So, for example, if we move someone from, let's just say, Buckhead to Alpharetta, there's more than just the real estate component to it. There are a number of factors. It could be an architect component. It could be a systems integrator component. It could be, you know, consulting with a cost segregation studies component. It could be any number of different components to it. And that's my job. My job is more than just doing the deal. I love doing the deal, but my job is really giving someone a complete package so that they can actually have the whole process taken care of in a relatively simple format. I will tell you that in general, no one likes to move. Moving.
It's a pain in the butt. Right?
It sucks. I'm going to be very straight with it. But people move for a reason. People move for strategic reasons to better their business. And it could be people move because they don't like their existing location. Traffic is a problem. I mean, we could talk all day about Atlanta traffic, but, you know, basically there are different reasons and motivations for people moving. And my job is to help make that process a little more complete or simplistic.
Now, do you have a sweet spot on companies you work with? Like, do you work in medical or do you work in law offices or any business?
Typically, my sweet spot is working with companies that are typically 15 employees to about 100 employees. Typically like to work with tenants that are Atlanta-based. However, I have a number of tenants that are from out of Atlanta. And the other sweet spot is I really... work the Georgia 400 corridor. I know the Georgia 400 corridor like no one's business. In fact, it's, you know, we're here at this show and my office is right across the street. I could have walked here, but I took my car.
That's good, Ted.
And basically, and I really enjoy the process and the art of doing a deal and solving the problem for the tenant.
So what do you find the most rewarding about your work, and what do you find a little bit challenging, if not downright frustrating?
I'll take what I don't like.
Let's lead with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I don't like is that as a broker, we are essentially middlemen in the process. We can't sign the lease. That's got to get signed by the landlord. It's got to get signed by the tenant. And at times, the tenant can drag its feet. Have you ever heard anybody ever drag their feet on something?
The tenant? Really? Because I would think they're the ones who want to move.
Yeah,
they
should want to move. But sometimes decisions come a little slower. And so, you know, being a middle person in the transaction probably is the most frustrating part.
The hurry up and wait, you don't like that?
Yeah, yeah, just hurry up and wait. But the thing I love is I love solving the problem. I love solving the problem and creating the solution. Because if you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's about for me. And hopefully the tenant realizes that and the landlord understands that. And the landlord, you know, I have very good friends on the landlord side. And one thing they know about me is I'm very straightforward. I tell it like it is. And, you know, they're not going to get all weird by me. I mean, I'm really going to kind of set them straight and try to come up with a market solution or a market answer decision for that tenant.
Now, do you have any stories where a tenant left the situation and you got them better space at less money?
It happens all the time.
Really?
It happens all the time. I mean, you know, it's basically, you know, we get into situations. It depends on what the tenant is doing. I'll give you an example of a tenant that was really in a bad situation. I wouldn't say more. They ended up spending a lot more money. But they were a company that was based out of Decatur. And they were basically in another person's building. And they basically said, hey, we need to find a new location. What ended up, and that started in 2007, what ended up was in December of 2010, this tenant actually moved into their new 60,000 square foot corporate headquarters facility, the first LEED Gold building in the city of Alpharetta. And that was through a long process of trying to evaluate exactly what they wanted, where they wanted it, and how we got there. And
they own the building?
They own the building.
Oh, wow.
It's a company called Advanced Education. And you may know them because they do accreditation for the Atlanta Public Schools, Clayton County. And, you know, they sometimes lose their accreditation. And this is the mothership. This is the folks that actually do all that all over the world. And they're a great organization. And they were looking for something that was a permanence for 20 years. And they could have found and bought a building that was far cheaper than what they did. But they had a long-term time horizon. They wanted to look at 20 years and say, what's the best thing for us? So we got them a building that's basically 60,000 square feet on 5.5 acres. And we own the adjacent 5.5 acres. So in case they ever want to build something more, they have the ability to do so.
Wow.
So in the spirit of connecting, you know, Lee Cantor is very wired in the business community here in Atlanta. Who can we help you connect with? Who do you want to meet right now?
I think what I want to meet with, besides just companies that may consider moving, I would tell you the one key driver for looking for me is if there's a change in leadership in an organization. There's a change in leadership in an organization because what happens is that change of leadership runs all the way down. They don't have their connection that they used to have. The old guard would have been for real estate is no more.
Right.
It's actually the only way I actually lose clients from time to time. I do because there's a change in leadership. So if you know of a company that is experiencing a change in leadership at the top level.
So the CEO.
CEO, COO, in those levels.
Uh-huh.
that would be an absolutely outstanding opportunity.
So you want to meet the new CEO, or you want to meet the departing CEO?
I typically work with the CEO, the COO.
Well, and he doesn't want to lose contact with the old CEO either, because that person is going to land some. Well, I don't know if this helps or not, but we may very well be getting a new executive producer for the High Velocity Radio Show if the existing one doesn't get his act together. So I'll keep you posted on that. So.
Absolutely.
Maybe you can help me land on my feet.
So how can our listeners learn more and maybe have a substantive conversation with you about all these topics?
Basically, they could do one of two things. I actually do a newsletter. It's called the 400 Corridor Report. And I'll give you my email. It's T. Schwartz. You have to spell that the Jewish way. It's S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. At AckermanCo.net. You can call me on the phone, 770-913-3930, or you can call me on the mobile, 770-713-2775. And even if it's something that you just have a question, you may not be ready to do anything, I'm happy to educate. I'm happy to be there and to assist in any way I can.
Well, thanks for coming and visiting with us this morning. I learned a lot more than I ever knew about
that was good.
About tenant advisory. How about you?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
All right. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'll be happy to.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the Grand Poobah of PQC International, Inc. Please welcome to the show Mr. Frank Payne. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm excited. I mean, I'm honored this morning because to know that I've been invited to the studio from our last mobile outreach, I'm just touched this morning. So I want you and the executive producer to know that.
Well, that was the impression you made, Frank.
You did. You made a heck of an impression. And you know, and it started with the wardrobe. You've got your whole entourage here. I know this is radio. With these bright yellow shirts, is there a story behind the wardrobe that we ought to know about?
The uniform at PQC is part of our brand. And I grew up in Procter & Gamble, and I was inundated with branding. And I know the power of brand. And we wear black and yellow in everything that we do, everything, the website, our uniform, even the staple on my desk is black and yellow. And so it's just all part of our brand. And where that brand came from is my days at Procter & Gamble and my days as a combat commander in the United States military. The U.S. Army's colors are black and yellow also. So it's been around me for a long, long time. The colors are very, very powerful. The yellow stands out. You're not going to miss us.
No, you're not going to miss Frank and his crew, are you?
Right. You may not know our name. Anywhere in the world that we travel to do business, that brand has always stood out. And it's always caused people to ask questions. That's what the brand is about. I was sitting on the plane coming back from San Diego, and a guy sitting beside me he said, "Don't y'all do business with us?" I looked at him. I said, "I don't know." I said, "But I can fix that for you real quick." Everybody asks us questions. They want to know about who we are, what we do, and so that's a good start conversation with us with the uniform.
Yeah,
it's all about branding.
Got me to ask the question.
It's so all about,
commander in the U.S. military.
Yes.
What have you taken from that life over into your corporate life that you might share with us?
I think the thing that from the military that I bring into PQC is the principle of discipline. The discipline around how you do things. I believe in methodologies. I believe in standardization. I believe in optimization. Because if you don't have a way that's standardized to do things, then that gives people the option to do whatever they want, and you'll never get to the goal that you're trying to achieve. You got to make sure you have a process in place to have the right people on the right bus. And on the right bus, they got to be in the right seat on the right bus. And to me, all that comes from the military. The military also teaches you how to be strong, how to think in in situations where you would normally not be able to make decisions. In the military, you got to make snap decisions, you got to make quick decisions, and you got to be able to do risk mitigation in your mind real quick. Because in combat, you don't have time to pull out a white paper or pull out some notepads and start writing things down.
You don't have time to take a boat or anything.
No, you don't have time for that.
They don't have white papers in the military.
No.
Really?
You would get shot. Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah, all those things was brought into the company. And to us, it's been a great success to having those in place. Now, I would tell you that people don't always like to wear the uniform. Mm-hmm. Right? People don't get hired. People decide not to come work for us because of the uniform.
Wow.
Really? A lot of folks, yeah, they say, well, I bought an option on this money on my suit. Or I got these high heels, you know, that I want to buy. I bought this new dress. Well, see, those people are not the people we want anyway. If you cannot come in and be a part of the family, then you're not supposed to be here. Because what do you tell the military? You go in the military and say, well, I don't want to be in the Army or the Air Force or Marine because I don't like your uniform. See, you got to have a higher commitment than that, than looking past the uniform. You can't go to UPS and say, I'm not going to wear a uniform. I'm not going to work for you. I want a uniform. You can't go tell Delta Airline that. So,
and you're not going to tell Frank Payne that either.
No, it won't work.
Did you try it the other way? Did you, when you first started this? Because, I mean, you came from the military, very structured. Procter & Gamble, I imagine, very structured. And now you're out on your own. And
right.
Then you had a blank page. You could have went any way you want, but you chose to
bring... You could have let the pendulum swing the other way. Yeah?
Right, but
yeah.
You said, I'm going to have some structure in my organization, right?
Yeah.
And did you bring the uniforms right away, or is that something you said, you know what, everybody do what they want, and then you learned that this isn't working, and you brought the uniform?
No, the uniforms came along. When I left Procter, again, at Procter, you understand, whether you believe it or not, we had uniforms. I had to wear a black suit, Ivy League red tie, long sleeve white shirt, and Oxford shoes. Okay, that was my uniform.
They told you that.
Oh, you yes.
Or you just looked around and everybody
figured that
else.
Out in a
hurry. No, you figured it out real quick. Okay. So I grew up in that environment, and
right.
And to me, being at Procter was like getting a second MBA, okay? This is my opinion, there's no place on earth that I would have rather landed after college than Procter & Gamble. They give you so much responsibility right out the gate. As a young kid, I was 20-some years old, and had phenomenal responsibility. I will always cherish every day, every second that I was sitting at Procter & Gamble. And so it prepared me when the day that I decided to leave, after 12 years of it, I decided to go do something else. I told Peter Marleville, my boss, I said, Peter, I got to go do something. I want to build something. And Peter asked me, he said, are you not happy at Procter? I said, no, I'm very. He said, you're not happy with your money? I said, I'm excited about the money I'm being made. And so long story short, I spent time with him as my mentor, and I made a decision a year later to exit P&G. Well, when I left, I had no clients. I had no money. I had nothing, okay? But I had a vision. I had a vision that I'm still living out today. And about 2 weeks later after I left, Peter Marvel called me up. He said, how you doing? I said, I'm doing fine. He said, I know I need some work for you to do. Long story short, that was my first contract. Procter & Gamble was my first contract. But after I got the contract, I said, Peter, I have a problem. He said, what's your problem, Frank? I don't have no staff. I don't have no office space. I don't have no computers. And so I went back, and he gave me his business card, and he signed the back of his business card and told me to go get what I need. So I went and got all my computer stuff. P&G paid for it, got me up and running.
Wow.
At the end of 1 year, I called him up. I said, I need to write you a check to pay you back. I said, because we're doing pretty good right now. And he said, nope. He said, just send us a check for $1, and we'll send you the paperwork. That's how I got started in business.
Wow. So it's about relationships, huh?
It's about relationships.
Yeah, I want to meet this guy.
Yeah. Right?
I think Business Radio X could use a relationship with
exactly.
this guy.
Yeah. Is Peter available?
he's retired, going back to Great Britain.
So PQC International, what do you guys do? What problems are you solving for folks?
Well, PQC International is a global management consulting firm, and I underline the word global. And the reason why I do that, because it's just not a word for us. We actually do work for our Fortune 500 and global 1,000 clients. So our clients are all over the map. So they could be in China, Brazil, wherever client access will go. My philosophy, if Delta will give us a ride, we'll go. All right? So it's not, we truly do global work. So we are a management consulting firm. And so people say, what do you do? Well, I'll respond to it is that we help you make whatever you do profitable and productive. And then we say, we don't compensate effort. Okay, we compensate measurable results. See, for us, it's all about being able to quantify what you do for a client. Because anybody can do consulting work. Anybody can do consulting work. You can have Joe Blow down the street can do consulting work.
A lot of out-of-work people will tell you that they're consultants, right?
Right. A lot of people use that term loosely. But we say if you can't help the client take it to the bank, then you're really not adding any value. And I think value has to be measured. And that's why we faithfully live by that statement. We do not compensate effort. We compensate measurable results. We live that way on our staff. I don't take it no different from my staff. We owe that to our clients. We need to add value. If we're not helping them increase revenue reduce costs or increase productivity for the employees, we're not doing our jobs.
So it's an eat what you kill world at PQC?
Yeah, especially within our in our part of our organization. If you know, you got to go out and make things happen for the client, because the last thing we want to do is get paid by a client and them have buyer's remorse, because consultants is not cheap. You don't want a client to have buyer's remorse in this business. You got to build relationships. You cannot expect to get a deal with a client without a relationship. A relationship is just like a marriage. It takes time to build it, but you can lose it within a second. I am firmly a believer in relationship building, and it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time, but you got to – and our philosophy is, how do you close that relationship gap? If you meet somebody new, how do you close that relationship gap fast? And there's some techniques we have to do that. But, again, you can do it through speaking engagement. You can help close the gap real fast. I mean, I met you guys just at the show.
Right,
okay?
Right.
But from that one thing, I met another guy named Steve. Well, he connected me into the P&G Alumni Association.
Oh, wow. Right?
So now I'm part of the P&G Alumni. So they've asked me to be on 4 or 5 talk shows. My first one is coming up in a couple of weeks.
You're welcome,
so,
Frank. That's all I'm hearing. Yeah. And a big thank you to us for making that happen.
It's a huge thank you. Because speaking engagements, lunch and learns, webinars, those are ways that we build relationships. Those are the way we get out there and build relationships.
Well, that sounds like okay, but I see that radio just kind of knocked the ball out of the park for you.
I think you guys really get credit for this.
Right? You know, that one interview you did, look at how many doors that opened.
That opened a lot of doors, seriously.
And
I'm excited about this whole process, because I see this type of show being something I want to do more often. So we'll talk about it after the show. But anyway, it's something I want to do more often, because I think this is the way to reach a wider audience. And at the same time I'm on the show, staff is back at the office tweeting, doing Facebook to sort of generate more activity within social media. See, a lot of ways to build relationship and learn how to play some golf. I'm not a golfer. I play golf like military. My balls go left and right. I've convinced myself it's not trying to win the game. It's about, on that first 9 holes, building a relationship.
That's right. So the worse you are, the better, because you spend more time with the guy.
Yeah. Because I got
And the client wins. That's right. How bad can that be, right?
The client going to win, and I'm not going to go look for that ball. I carry extra balls in my bag.
Hey, if you can't afford to play. You know?
I drop the ball, and we keep going. So,
you're staying back.
Yeah. You know, I'm having fun. I'm having fun, though.
And now, can you just give us an example? You say that you don't get compensated for effort. Can you walk us through what a real-life engagement looks like for your firm? Like,
yes.
Say our company, we're always looking for more sales, and we want to engage with you. How would that work?
Well, if you're looking for more sales, that's not the kind of consulting we do.
What do you do?
Okay. We are consulting, for example. Let's take one area, engineering, for example. Okay? And let's say that you have some problems in your operation, and you have a lot of failure with your equipment.
Okay.
Out in the world somewhere.
Right.
Well, one of the stuff we offer is forensic. We do a lot of forensic analysis work, you know, like CSI, Miami, CSI, New York type stuff. So we love doing forensic work. We like coming in, solving, and looking for issues, why your plant's not working, or why your equipment's not working, or why your operation's not working. And we would actually head up and run the forensic operations to get to the root cause of why things are happening. So that's one area of consulting. Another area of consulting is that, let's say that you're trying to, you own a manufacturing plant, and you make cookies, okay?
Right.
But your production is not running the way it's supposed to be. The line is not efficient as the way it's supposed to be. We can come in and help you optimize that production line. Now, there are three components of that. There's your people on the line, there's the technology on the line, and there's also, you know, how all of the, you know, processes are working. Do you have the right process in place? And see, a lot of time, you're not getting the right products off the line, or the quality of the product not right. You say, why is this not working? Well, there's a lot of reason that's not working. And those kind of things we love. We love solving problems. And I tell you straight up, I get up every morning praying for all our clients. I pray for those prospects I'm working with. I pray for the clients. And my prayer is, God, please help my clients have more problems. Because why? Because we are problem solvers. We're here to help them solve problems. Okay, the guest before said he's like a chef. Well, we're your doctor. I want to know what your pain is. I want to know what you're suffering, what pain are you suffering, what challenge are you having in your organization, either with your people, your process, or your technology. And so it doesn't matter to us what industry you're in. We're industry agnostic. I don't care if you're in healthcare. I don't care if you're in real estate. I don't care if you're in manufacturing. I don't care if you're IT. It doesn't matter to us. We're focusing on what are your problems? What are your challenges? And that's what we're all about.
Okay, let's take that cookie example. Say I'm producing X number of cookies, and you think I should be producing 3X number of cookies. Are you only getting paid when I do better than X? Like, how are you being compensated?
Well, we can structure the deal a number of different ways. We can come in and actually look at what the issues are.
Right.
And we can make it painless for you by saying, look, we pretty much know what we're going to do to solve this problem.
Right.
So, therefore, we don't want you to be surprised when you get an invoice from us.
Right.
So, we've done enough requirement analysis to truly understand your problem. So, we're going to give you a fixed price deal.
Right.
So that as we fix the problem and you get an invoice from our controller, you're not shocked.
Right.
Because we're not charging you by the hour or by whatever.
It's by the project.
It's by the project. Now, that's one way to structure. The second way, you may say, well, gee, you know, I'd rather not go that route.
Right.
And if you tell me that, I'm going to have you checked out by a doctor. But you may want to be charged by the hour because maybe you don't know what your problems are.
Right.
So sometimes we got to do some investigative work that may take a lot of time to do that. And we may enter into a time and material type contract with you to help get to that point.
So that's a standard consulting.
Right. But once we understand what your problem is, we'd like to lock it down to help be more cost effective. We're not here to make you lose money. We're trying to help you be in a position to gain more revenue and make your business operate more profitably.
Right.
So it's a lot of the way we can structure the deal to get you what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So with a global presence, do you run into any cultural challenges in describing the work or executing on the work?
Yes, we do. On our staff, if you come to our office in Norcross, you'll find that there are 14 flags in our main conference room. And those 14 flags actually represent 14 nations on our staff, physically in our office in Norcross. There are 14 nations. And the reason why is because from the beginning with the vision of the company was not designed to be just the typical business. It's designed to be a business that was more diversified by culture, not by race, not by gender, but by culture. We are more interested in the cultural aspect. You know, we have people from Moldova on staff. We have people from Russia sitting right here to my right from on our staff. We have people from India on our staff, China, South Korea, Philippines. The list goes on. So we literally have 14 nations represented on our staff. And that's important to us because last year for a client, we was in India doing a major, major engagement. And that culture is a very, very complex. You got to understand what you're doing. You have 29 states inside India. You have about, and Kavita could probably correct me, but you got many, many dialects of languages. You got many languages. So it's very complex, but a great place to do business. But you got to know what you're doing. And so, you got to have the right type of staff to do that. You just can't go to somebody's country and do that. We have a team that's down in Brazil right now doing work for a major client. I just got back from South Africa because we're getting to do work there. We've done work for clients in Suzhou, China, Shanghai. We've done work in LA, Australia for clients. So you got to understand that local culture, and you can be global, but you better take some time to understand local culture because even hand signs can get you in trouble. The way you speak words can get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got to respect other people's culture. You got to understand and respect it because we as Americans sometimes, we want everybody to respect America. We can be arrogant ourselves and not respect other people. At PQC, we pride ourselves in studying other people's culture, understanding their culture, and doing the best we can to respect their culture. So that's how we operate from a global perspective. So when we go somewhere, we truly going to make sure we understand them out of respect.
Now, you talk about local. Are you involved in any local community-oriented activities here in Atlanta?
Yes, we are. We on our website, for those that are, I'll give it to you later, but one of the things we do is outreach. We're involved in the local community. Just recently, we participated in the Vietnamese New Year event because we have some Vietnamese on our staff. And again, another way to learn. We do a lot of work with the youth in the community. Work with youth at the juvenile detention center, work with youth in different schools. We have a youth boot camp where we bring youth in and we put them through the mill. It's not easy. It's very painful, but yet and still we help them make sure they understand how to do their work, help them understand life, So plus we have an internship program. And matter of fact, the young man sitting on the corner, he's one of our interns. We believe that if you're going to do something, you got to give back in your local community. And the way we've chosen to do that is through a youth program. I believe that when the rest of us in this room are older, I want to make sure I've impacted some youth enough that if they see me, you know, I ain't going to be in a wheelchair, but if I'm in a hover round, you know, with a PQC flag flying on it, okay, I want to make sure that they know that we've touched their lives somewhere, somehow, okay? Because if you don't give back to the community, and I think companies need to make the reach out to the community their number one priority. And it has to be a higher priority than making money. Because if you give back to the community, I'm telling you guys, it comes back in avalanches of abundance. I don't mean just come back in a bucket. It comes back in avalanches of abundance when you reach out to the community. And that is so important to me. I don't care. Like, we have a strong relationship with the Norcross Co-op Ministry, helping with food and clothing and all those kind of things. And we got, Clarkston, you know, refugee out there. I mean, the list goes on. It's all on our website. We have a youth scholarship program. You got to give back. Now, I know a lot of people like to deal with different organizations, like senior citizens or different. We focus on youth. I just have a passion for youth because the way I grew up, somebody had to reach back and help me, okay? And I have a strong passion for youth. I grew up in Mississippi, okay? And my mom and dad didn't go past the eighth grade. I had to have somebody that would reach back and help me, all right? And so one of my counselors at high school helped me, took me to Tuskegee, got me in school, and helped me, you know, get acclimated to school. She helped me. While I was in college, as an engineer, I did internship in Aiken, South Carolina. Somebody helped me to get in an intern. And I'll never forget, Bill Flatley was one of my mentors at the Atomic Energy Commission. I call him Redhead Irishman. He was a good friend of mine. He just was a strong mentor. He told me one day, he said, "See that guy going down the hallway pushing that trash can? That's a janitor, Frank." The first lesson he taught me, he said, "Be nice to the janitor because tomorrow he could be your boss." And the lesson that I take from that is, you don't know who path you're going to cross. You don't know what relationship you're going to be trying to build. Respect everybody you run across, no matter if they're being mean or nasty to you, smile at them and put love on them. Because someday, somehow, you're going to cross their path again. And so those kind of lessons what I try to instill to my people at PQC. Yeah, we're in the business to grow the business and create jobs and do those things. But the reach out in the community is passion for me. And I'm very strong about that.
Well, I believe you. I believe every word that you've said here this morning. How can our listeners learn more about you and your work?
I would invite our listeners to go to our website, www.pqcinternational.com. Or you can feel free to call me on my phone at 678-558-0146. Please give me a call because if you got some youth you want us to work with, we're open to do that. If you have some other problems with your business, call me and we will come and be your doctor. We're here to rescue you, to keep you outside of the emergency room. Don't go to the emergency room. It won't work for you. So go to www.pqcinternational.com or call me 678-558-0146. I'm looking for your call. You can tweet us. You can Facebook us. Don't tweet me on Facebook because I don't know how to do it yet. So do it with the company. Hey, guys, thank you very much. This is always an honor to be here. And the two of you need to understand also, and I say this sincerely, both of y'all, with your show, you're doing a lot of things out there for small businesses and other businesses in the community. And I humbly say continue to do what you're doing. Continue to touch the community around that we live in, because your show is really touching a lot of folks out there. And probably a lot of people that you won't even know that walking past you in the mall on a Saturday, you've touched their lives, don't even know it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the compliment. It's been an absolute delight having both of you in here this morning. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Ted Schwartz and Frank Payne, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.